The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie, and we're in the same room.
We're together!
Again, not romantically, we're together in person.
We I did that last time,
I know,
too.
I know, it's okay. I think people make that mistake often.
I mean, you're my platonic life partner, so.
Oh, yeah, we literally say I love you, like, every time we absolutely. If I don't tell Ashley that something has happened, it's not real.
Yeah. Did not happen.
Yeah, no, it didn't until Ashley knows. It's not a part of my life until Ashley is aware of what's going on.
So what's been going on with you? You drove here today.
Drove here. Let Choopy out. My phone took me a really weird way, actually.
Oh.
We didn't talk about this. So normally it takes me like 30, like down that way. Yeah. And then through the Amish area. And then we passed the Christmas gate. I didn't take me that way. It took me like 83 to 78, like through Harrisburg for some reason.
That's weird.
And it was almost 3 hours.
That's like the last time I went to visit you, and it took me to a town half an hour away from you because it had, like, the same address.
Yeah. It was super fucking weird. It was super weird. I didn't recognize anything until I got to, like, Clinton Diner.
Yeah.
It was so weird.
That's weird. And then you were sitting in traffic, too.
Oh, yeah. I was sitting in traffic for a while, which was really, really frustrating.
I was also so surprised when you were like, yeah, I'm gonna leave after, like, little dude gets on the bus. It's, like, 8:30 in the morning.
I'm, like, not good at having something to do later.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Nothing until then.
I get that.
Especially when it's apparently a three-hour drive that's not supposed to be 3 hours. yeah, no, I just gotta get it done. And then it was perfect, because then I got here, let Choopy out, and took a nap.
Yeah, while I was at work. It was great.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Is everything okay?
Oh, yeah. Mike,
Oh, you get your text on your...
I get my text through my laptop, and I may have sent Mike a link to an Etsy shop and was like, if you're ever looking to get me a gift, you should get it from here.
Listen, sometimes you have to be that direct with them.
To be fair, Mike does sometimes need to be that direct with me. He's hard to shop for.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Just the other day, he told me a few things that he, like, wants to get back into, like, harmonica and stuff and, like, gifts I can get him.
Oh, my God, adorable.
So I was like, well, you know, if he's just going to be like, these are gifts that I'm interested in, then I'm going to fucking do the same thing. So.
Yes. Can I tell you, and I feel like you know about this, but You know your Roomba that you love so much?
Oh, yeah, that you texted him and told
Yeah,
him, yeah.
I literally sent him the link. I said, "Hi, this is not the high-priced one that she wants. It's a little bit cheaper, but it's a starter one for her." I said, "She wants this for Christmas. Get it for her."
That's amazing.
I love him so much because not 2 minutes later, after I sent it to him, he texted me back a screenshot of the confirmation
Yep.
from him ordering it and
Yep.
goes, "Done." And I
Yep.
went, "You are incredible, sir."
He knows when to listen.
Yeah.
He's like, this, it's Ashley. She definitely knows exactly what Katie wants. So yeah,
I was
perfect.
like, I have heard her mention wanting a fucking Roomba so many times.
There, I'm obsessed with my Roomba. It has a schedule that it like follows. I fucking love my Roomba. I
I need
literally am
that.
so thankful for you and Mike every time I use my Roomba. It's so perfect.
I need to
My
get one.
floors are so
Damn.
clean. Dan, what's up? Listen to this podcast.
Do we have any other updates? I don't know. We're going to the farmer's market
Oh yeah,
tomorrow. That's gonna
farmer's
be
market
fun.
tomorrow, and the
And the
spa
Korean
on
spa.
Sunday.
Yes. I love getting naked in that bathhouse.
It is the green tea.
The green tea bath. And now they've
Yeah.
been adding, oh, they've been adding something else to it, and I
Oh shit.
cannot remember what
It
it
makes me feel so
was.
fancy.
It does. And your skin feels so good afterwards.
Oh my God, amazing. I've like this is so embarrassing. Like definitely thrown green tea bags in my bath after going here. It's just like anything to try and recreate it. It's so
It's
nice.
never the
No,
same.
absolutely not.
No.
But
Oh my
like I
God.
can close my eyes and smell the green tea bags and be like, shh, let's pretend. Let's try and relax for a
You have a
second.
pretty magnificent bathtub. Like, I do not have the same
Yeah.
experience here in this tiny apartment.
I can at least really stretch out in
Yeah.
the
You
bathtub.
can fit like three bodies in there
It's
comfortably
pretty
at
straight.
once.
Straight? What? What the fuck did I just say? It's pretty. I don't.
Pretty great.
It's pretty great. Legit. I don't know what I meant
It's
to
10
say.
o'clock at night when we're doing this, and we just gave ourselves more sustenance by eating dinner that my husband made for us while we
So
were
good.
out.
Shout out, Dan. Thank you.
There's no way we were gonna get through this, especially because this is probably gonna be a long episode.
Oh yeah, I also ate two gummies in the car before I ate dinner. I'm in a recreational state. It's fine. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So that's why I was like,
Yeah.
this is gonna be a pretty serious
Well,
conversation.
I am a cannabis candidate. I'm, trying to destigmatize cannabis here. So I'll talk about it. I brought Katie to a now legal
Oh
dispensary
my God, it was
in New
amazing.
Jersey.
It was amazing. First of
It's
all, it
very
was.
like it's like a high-end experience.
It's like an Apple store.
Truly.
Yeah.
That's it's got the look, it's got the feel.
It's got the vibes of an Apple store, but like not pretentious.
Yeah. Like
If you
everyone's
can
nice.
imagine it. Yeah, everyone's great. I mean, like this sounds like so fuck, and this makes me sound so old, but it's I'm talking about a dispensary, but like it was really cool to see like a local business thriving.
Yes.
They were it was packed. It was packed in there with literally every type of person.
Yes. Did I not say to you? And I said this the first time when I went with my running mate. I was like, the diversity in this place, and not just like, I know when people hear that word, they just think like color or whatever, but I'm talking like age, like
Oh,
personality.
yeah,
You've
like
got like that one dude that was like dressed up like he just got off Wall
I was
Street
literally like
walking
present
out when we
the
walked
Wall
in.
Street broker dude,
Yeah.
and then like right next to him, like this young girl who looked like she was like ready to like go chill with her friends, and then like in front of us, which looked like to be a father son duo, which was dope. Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. It
It
was
was
amazing.
incredible.
Yeah.
It was such a nice experience. And I was like, Katie, you need to experience this.
Yeah, I love going to different dispensaries. I've been to a few different states of dispensaries at this point now.
Yeah.
California, Colorado, Maine, Pennsylvania, New
Not
Jersey.
Illinois.
Yeah, it's pretty dope actually. Oh, Massachusetts. Oh, sweet, checking off that fucking list. Hell yeah. You know what? Send me your favorite dispensary. I'm gonna come.
I don't think I've ever
This was your first...
Well, not today.
No, but like this one that you went to. Yeah.
Like a legal place. I don't think I've ever been to one. I've never been to Colorado. I've never been to California. Like, never been in one.
Yeah, and when you came to Portland, it wasn't recreational yet.
No. And I can't go in with you in Pennsylvania because it's medical only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's why I was telling you that it was such an interesting experience to go into one for the first time with my running mate when mm-hmm. she took me, because it's I've never experienced that before. It was like weird at first.
Yeah.
But all the people there that work there are very chill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really chill. Really understanding when you make a bunch of mistakes.
When it's clearly your first time in the store.
Yeah. Well, then they had like a whole paper, but then like all of those were sold out. Oh. I normally do all of my stuff online. I'm like a very much so like look at the menu beforehand type of person, but I didn't bring my phone in.
Well, I wonder if you can order online ahead of time and pick it up. Probably. I wonder if that's a thing. That's why I always wonder what the people at the front desk do, because I never interact with them. I usually just interact with the security guard.
Interesting. It might be pickup orders.
Yeah. Which would be cool.
That would be pretty cool. I could talk about just that. That's going to be a topic.
Oh, we should.
Yep. But that's not today.
No, that's most not today. Certainly not today's topic. So today's topic is near and dear to my heart. Going to be talking about different facets of adoption in America. I am adopted, everybody. I feel like I've mentioned it before on the show.
Yeah, definitely. But in case like someone is like searching out an adoption episode and doesn't know, or like this is your first episode, Ashley is adopted.
I am adopted. Myself and my only cousin on my mother's side are the only ones adopted in our family. Somebody must have told me when I was younger, but I didn't remember that he was adopted. And when we reconnected, when I was around, like, you know, 20, 21, he told me, and he was like, yeah, that's why I wanted to hang out, because we're both adopted. I was like, bro, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, either no one told me or I just don't remember because I was so young. But it's definitely been interesting. I've always known. My parents did this really cool thing where the first couple years of my life, they made it into like a hardcover storybook called The Amazing Adoption Story of Princess Ashley.
I love that. Oh my god.
Every page had like a collage of family photos too. And when I say hardcover book, I mean this is a book. And they had like an artist draw like a little castle and me in a little princess dress on the front. It's very adorable. Oh
my god.
Like it's super cartoony, you know?
Yeah, that's I love it. So cute. Yeah. Oh my god.
And that, hey, you were at my sweet 16. My mom read like a couple pages of it at the Sweet 16.
You're asking me to reach
deep down. It was a really long time ago.
Deep down.
It was like 14 years ago. 15 years ago.
No, I don't have, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of memories. That's...
It was an interesting
night. That's drama for another day.
Yeah, but... So I've got, you know, I've always known... I did always have questions, and I won't go into, like, too many details because it's ridiculous, but at one point, I did find my birth mom, and it was interesting talking to her, that's for sure, but I feel like I got very lucky because mine wasn't done through an agency. My aunt knew my birth mother's, like, foster family and knew that she wanted to put her baby up for adoption. And made that connection. So we really just did everything like through lawyers and the court. There wasn't anything like with an adoption agency.
So that's a like a private adoption?
Yeah.
And then another question. Do agencies also do some quote unquote private adoptions? Or...
Yes.
Okay. I'm sure we'll get into that.
There are closed and there are open adoptions.
Okay.
Which, yeah, we'll talk about it a little bit. But, you know, there's all different kinds. And it also depends on what state you're in. Some states have certain restrictions and everything. But that's pretty much what it was. And, like, I got adopted by a really amazing family.
Oh, yeah.
And have had a great life because of them.
Absolutely.
But that's not always the case. It's not always the case for everyone. There's a lot of issues with adoption, not just in America, but, like, everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. But America's... it's not great. We got a lot of these, like, Christian adoption agencies doing some shady things.
When you say, like, adoptions in America, does that mean, like, Americans going other places also? Or are we just talking strictly?
Any.
Okay.
But really, like, the agencies themselves. Okay. I want to kind of focus on.
Like, American agencies.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the main reasons why I wanted to do this episode in particular is because of a TikTok video that I found, and I kind of dived into this person's whole page because she talks about a lot of this. She herself, I believe, is an adoptee from Greece. I think it's Greece. Her name is Krista, and her handle is Karpouzi. And
how do you spell that?
Karpouzi.
Okay, so I thought it like C-A-R.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad I asked. Spelling and math, not my things.
So she found these Facebook groups that are like already adopted children rehoming Facebook groups.
Whoa.
Yeah. And people make these posts on there that, and you, having worked in a kennel, you know this.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, don't love rehoming. Like, that's literally what we
say
about. So
they'll, like, make posts that read like a fucking ad for adopting a dog. And I'm gonna read one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay.
It's so uncomfortable. And I went on a deep dive on this girl's page because there's so much of it out there happening. And it's just like, first of all, you adopted a kid and, like, who knows the situation from before, but you are the one who said that you're going to care for this kid. I don't care what this kid is like. You adopted this child.
Yeah.
This is your child now.
You committed to this kid.
You're
this
now
is your kid.
Re-traumatizing that, because adoption, no matter how good it goes, is traumatizing for birth mothers and babies. It is. It doesn't matter how good it is.
Oh my gosh.
And, like, you're just traumatizing them all over again. So, I'm going to read this one about Austin. Austin was adopted from Ethiopia when he was 3 years old. He is now 7 years old and is taller and heavier than most boys his age. He began losing baby teeth at 4 years of age, indicating his biological age may be greater than what was reported. Austin is a very friendly, extroverted, affectionate boy. Usually the family, class, or group spokesperson or host welcoming others to the group. He loves snuggling and hugs and enjoys being with family members and at family gatherings. He gets along well with cousins and is popular at school. Austin is a good conversationalist and enjoys interacting with others. He is clever and has a great sense of humor. This is a private adoption, so a state or foster home study might not work. A state-authorized private domestic or international home study is generally required. Literally sounds like an ad for a dog to be adopted.
Imagine, like, listing out some of the positive things about this kid being that, like, he's, like, really loves hanging out with the people he considers family.
Yeah, that one was
and,
fucked up.
you know, he loves his cousin, and he's really popular at school. Like, you know, people love him, and he loves his school. So how about let's fuck this up for him?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And there's hundreds and thousands of posts like that.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. So.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's honestly insane.
Oh my God. Okay.
I want to talk, you know, we discussed that. I want to talk about,
like, fully having a trauma response. My body's like, this is a lot. Go to sleep.
Oh my God.
This is my trauma. This is, like, how you fear tear. My body fear sleeps. It's like, no, this is too much. Go to bed.
This is Katie's version of fear tearing. Oh my God.
Okay, keep going.
Got it together, baby.
I've got caffeinated beverage, and we're not going to sleep. This is important.
No. So I also want to talk about the Christian agencies that we have in this country and some of the terrible things that they have done to children and women throughout those systems. I also want to talk about the forced sterilization of Black, Hispanic, and Indigenous women. So first of all, let's talk about crisis pregnancy centers. Do you know what that is, Katie?
John Oliver did an episode.
Oh, maybe.
About them. But it was, maybe I'm not thinking of the right thing, but it was like places where women go when they find out they're pregnant and to like sort of seek advice. But then they were places that were like actually secretly religious shit.
Yeah.
That was like making it, you know, telling them that they'd help them like get an abortion or something. But then their appointment would be pushed back until they couldn't get it. Is that the same?
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely a part of it. Essentially, okay. Their right-wing Christian response to abortion clinics. Think of all the videos that you've seen on TikTok and people maybe elsewhere.
Okay.
Of people protesting outside of like Planned Parenthood buildings, trying to coerce women into not going inside. Well, some of those groups and those people start crisis pregnancy centers, and they try to make it seem like it's an abortion clinic.
Yeah, because you didn't know where to go, that crisis pregnancy center sounds like a great place to get some resources.
Yes, exactly. They're really trying to make it seem like it's an abortion clinic to trick people into going inside. And once you're inside, though, they only try to, like, talk you out of that very personal decision. Some groups even have mobile centers that they'll park near, like, a Planned Parenthood or another, like, private abortion center try to poach patients.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I've actually seen videos of that on TikTok from, like, Planned Parenthood defenders who are trying to protect the patients, who take videos of those that are, like, parked a block away.
Genuinely, like, there is a special place in bad karma for those people who are, like, fucking with people who are just trying to, like, walk into Planned Parenthood. Most of the time, actually all the time, they're just trying to receive medical care.
Yeah. And most of the time, it has nothing to do with pregnancy. Like, I literally just went because I needed my yearly fucking pap smear.
Oh, yeah. I've gone to Planned Parenthood 20 plus times, and never once has it had to do with pregnancy.
Yeah.
Ever.
None of the times that I have gone there have I been pregnant.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I have remained unpregnant thanks to Planned Parenthood.
Thank you. So now I'm going to read some excerpts from a Salon article entitled The Christian Adoption Racket.
Oh, racket. Oh, that's words. Remember in like MK Ultra when there was that one time where I described Maureen gets horror?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, that word, like, I can't, I hate, that's how I'm feeling about racket.
Ooh.
Okay. God, these are fucking children we're talking about.
Yeah. In Shotgun Adoption, a truly chilling investigative report in the current issue of The Nation, author Catherine Joyce reveals that so-called and taxpayer-funded crisis pregnancy centers, CPCs, often have an extreme Christian agenda, even more corrupt than using false pretenses and scare tactics to pressure women to continue challenging pregnancies. That is, they don't just coerce women to have children, they coerce women to give their children up.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, keep going. Whoa.
Like, the woman might not even have been thinking about adoption as the option, and they heavily push for that.
Holy shit.
Yeah. While there is growing awareness of how CPCs hinder abortion access, the centers have a broader agenda that is less well known. They seek not only to induce women to choose life, but to choose adoption, either by offering adoption services themselves or by referring women to Christian adoption agencies, Joyce writes.
I...
far more than other adoption agencies, conservative Christian agencies demonstrate a pattern and history of coercing women to relinquish their children.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my. No comment.
Critics call this an industry that coercively separates willing biological parents from their offspring, artificially producing orphans for Christian parents to adopt, rather than helping birth parents care for wanted children. Some go as far as to call CPCs adoption rings, with, as Joyce summarizes the charge, a multi-step agenda, evangelizing, discovering and exploiting women's insecurities about age, finances, or parenting, then hard-selling adoption, portraying parenting as a selfish, immature choice.
Okay, I have so much to say about that, okay, because that actually touches on so many things. Is there a way that you can kind of like, can I see the notes to see the quote, beginning of the quote?
Yeah, of course. Here.
Okay.
Just be careful of the wires.
Okay. Okay. Separates willing biological parents from their offspring. Disgusting. Artificially producing orphans. Literally the worst thing I've ever heard. Yeah. In my entire fucking life. So it was this sentence right here that I really wanted to repeat. Rather than helping birth parents care for wanted children. So this is something...
Like, that's a huge facet of fucking Planned Parenthood, is to help people get through that.
Absolutely. And this is something... Yeah, you can take your computer back. That I've always wondered, because there are a lot of situations in which kids end up in foster systems due to lack of resources, lack of funding, and it's parents who are trying their absolute fucking hardest, who want to be parents, who are really trying, and end up in a shitty situation.
Yes.
So then we take the kids away and pay an other people to take care of the kids. Why not just give that money to the parents?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same. Oh, God.
Okay. Yeah, man. It's fucked up.
This is horrible.
Mm-hmm. So Joyce tells the story of Carol Jordan. Now that's a pseudonym.
Okay.
A 32-year-old woman who answered a CPC ad and found herself at Bethany Christian Services, which, as it turns out, is the nation's largest adoption agency.
Oh my God.
And which is ranked poorly by birth mothers on adoption websites, where adoptive parents also express concern about coercion they witnessed.
Oh, I'm sorry. How is that still a thing?
Well, keep that name, Bethany Christian Services, in your head, okay? Because we're going to talk about them more. There, a counselor convinced her that adoption was a win-win, Joyce writes. Jordan wouldn't have death on her hands. Her bills would be paid, and the baby would go to a family of her choosing in an open adoption. Remember that.
Okay.
The counselor suggested Jordan move into one of Bethany's shepherding family homes, away from the influence of family and friends.
Red flags?
Yeah, massive red flags. Yes.
But, like, you're in a situation where you don't have any other options. Like, what else are you, you know?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You think that these people are genuinely going to want to help you.
You think it's a crisis center.
Yep. And, yeah, shepherding family. Yeah, that's, that. We truly mean that. So, she wound up with a family in Myrtle Beach who, and I love this quote in this article, who hovering, it seems, like the weird neighbors in Rosemary's Baby, referred to her as a birth mother, even though, while committed to continuing the pregnancy, she was still on the fence about adoption.
Wow. And still saying, like, birth mother. Wow. Yes.
The agency sent scrapbooks of letters from hopeful parents. Once you say you won't kill the baby, they ask, what can you give it? You have nothing to offer, but here's a family that goes on a cruise every year, Jordan recalls.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Once you agree to not kill... Every part of that is so fucked up, so manipulative, mm-hmm. so coercive.
Gaslighting.
Holy shit.
The whole nine yards.
Wow. And 12 yards after.
Yep.
Like,
she did end up choosing a couple because, you know, they were pushing adoption on her, even though she was on the fence. Like I told you, they're not trying to help them. They're just trying to talk them out of keeping the baby.
Yeah. And at this point, like, you're living, these people have provided you, like, medical care, a place to live, and they're constantly telling you, like, you have nothing to provide. Look at what you need to survive. We're giving you everything. Like, yeah, that's, like, literal fucking brainwashing.
Mm-hmm. That couple attended the birth, but despite Bethany's promise, Jordan would never find out who they were. Remember, they said it was going to be an open adoption. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The next day, the counselor said that fully open adoptions weren't legal in South Carolina.
Bullshit.
So Jordan wouldn't receive identifying information on the adoptive parents. The baby was relinquished to the couple. And 5 days later, Jordan used her last $50 to buy a Greyhound ticket to Greenville, where she struggled for weeks to reach a Bethany post-adoption counselor as her milk came in and she rapidly lost more than 50 pounds in her grief.
Oh my God.
When Jordan called Bethany's statewide headquarters one night, her shepherding mother answered and responded with, "You're the one who spread your legs and got pregnant out of wedlock. You have no right to grieve for this baby."
Oh my.
The way I would reach through that phone and slap the silly out of that bitch.
Holy shit.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Holy shit.
As I said earlier, adoption is extremely traumatic for both child and birth mother. And, like, for the children, it's definitely a little bit after the fact because you're not aware until a certain point.
Absolutely, and it's something that, like, as you get older, it becomes, I imagine, it becomes bigger.
Yeah, rude train.
Seriously.
But for the birth mother, that shit is instantaneous. She's literally living through this trauma. And then being told that she's not allowed to grieve for something that she grew inside of her body for 40 weeks?
That's... Holy shit.
Wow. So, let's talk more about Bethany Christian Services, who, by the way, have financial ties to Betsy DeVos. And for anyone who doesn't remember who she is, that's Trump's education secretary.
Of course.
In 2021, Bethany Christian Services announced that they favor overhauling the Multi-Ethnic Placement Act, which bars racial discrimination in placing a child into an adoptive family. I love this quote. As part of its long journey toward becoming, it's definitely a long journey toward becoming an anti-racist organization, Bethany's leaders now believe a child's race should be considered as part of the best interest determination for child placement. So they're trying to say that they don't want something that stops people from discriminating against babies and children. They think that they should be able to put only white kids with white families, only black kids with black families, only Hispanic with Hispanic.
Oh, God.
But, like, honestly, with the amount of children that are in, like, the foster care system and shit like that and need to actually be adopted that are already here and existing and suffering, like, I don't think that that would bode well for the majority of kids who do actually need to be adopted into, like, good families. That's, like, a weird way to say we're trying to be anti-racist.
Well, trying to be, like, it's important to us that the family that this baby is going into shares similar cultural aspects to them. That's one thing. Just, but like, that's not what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh God. Ah. Remember back in 2018 when Trump put his zero tolerance immigration policy into effect and thousands of kids were separated from their families at the Mexican border?
Yeah, that's really fucking hard to forget.
Yeah. Well, the government began to engage foster care providers throughout the country to house children whose parents were forced or coerced into giving them up at the border. According to the organization, as in Bethany Christian Services, as of June 23rd, 2018, it had provided foster services to 81 children separated from their parents as part of that zero tolerance immigration policy. In an article from Snopes, at the end of June 2018, one foster care provider in particular came under intense scrutiny and was the subject of speculation over its operations, as well as its links to the Trump administration. On June 24th, the left-wing Facebook page, the other 98%, posted a widely shared meme about Bethany Christian Services. It's Chalupa at the door. The quote is, "Bethany Christian Services, an adoption center with financial ties to Betsy DeVos, has taken 81 immigrant children who were forcibly separated from their parents at the border. Most have had no contact with their families. They're charging $700 per child per night. This isn't foster care. This is state-sponsored kidnapping."
Holy shit.
So the links between the extended DeVos family and Bethany are, bro, it's plain as fucking day. So let's go over that really quickly. Tax filings archived by ProPublica show that between 2001 and 2015, the Dick and Betsy DeVos Foundation, the philanthropic organization run by DeVos and her husband, gave $343,000 in grants to Bethany Christian Services.
That is so much money.
Oh, it gets worse. Between 2012 and 2015, Bethany received $750,000 in grants from the Richard and Helen DeVos Foundation, which is run by the education secretary's father-in-law.
Oh my God.
The billionaire founder of Amway, Richard DeVos. He's the billionaire founder of Amway.
Okay.
It's Richard DeVos and his wife, Helen.
Oh, my God.
I said that really weird. I had that written weird. Furthermore, Brian DeVos, a cousin of Betsy DeVos's husband, Dick, was the senior vice president for Child and Family Services at Bethany as recently as 2015.
Jesus Christ.
And Maria DeVos.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Who is married to Dick DeVos's brother, Doug, has served on the board at Bethany.
Okay.
It's such a conflict of interest.
It is like literally a family business.
Yeah.
Like family only, basically.
The organization has existing contracts with the Department of Health and Human Services to provide refugee resettlement services, as well as more overtly Christian initiatives such as abstinence-only sex education and, this is in quotes, healthy marriage promotion, which I couldn't really find anything on, and we just know that it's not actually healthy. It's a really...
No, it's like going to be like
it'll gross be like the patriarchy.
Rules. Yeah. Yeah, like God wants you to be at the bottom or something.
Okay. Snopes sent Bethany Christian Services a series of detailed questions.
Amazing.
And received a response to some of them.
Some.
After the article was published, so they added on to it.
Okay.
A spokesperson did not give us the number of migrant children who have been taken into the company's care since the implementation of the zero tolerance policy, telling us in an email that the number is constantly changing.
Okay. That's a quote. Don't love that. It shouldn't. That means it's just going up?
That means that it's like they're constantly rehoming these kids and bringing in more.
Well, yeah, like, so, like, but if they're saying, like, how many kids have you taken in since the Zero Tolerance Policy Act? And they're like, it keeps changing.
That's okay,
like,
but you should have these records.
But, like, even if it keeps changing, we only asked how many you're taking in. So yeah, that's just letting us know it's just going up. Like,
because that's a lot more than 80. That's different than 81. Yeah.
I was about to say, don't we have at least...
Yeah, so. They declined to offer even a rough breakdown of the locations where separated children had been fostered out, citing the safety of the children. No, you just don't want these kids found. Because, and this is what this is, man. So, these kids are already traumatized because the government ripped them away from their families at the border. And now the government is paying this company to take the children that they have ripped from their families and put them in other homes in a country that they do not know. You are literally re-traumatizing these children after they've already been ripped from their families.
And, like, do you know what the correct answer to that question would have been? The correct answer would have been, for safety reasons, we obviously can't give out exact addresses, but we did everything we could to make sure that families, or like children, were placed close to where their parents were to ensure that they could see them and speak to them whenever it was necessary. That should have been the fucking answer.
Yep. Woo!
Or like every child was placed within 5 miles of
where their parents are.
And if they like couldn't that. Be, then... you know, something is being set up for blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever. That should have been the answer.
Yep. Ah, no transparency. When asked about the fees Bethany was charging to the federal government for its services, the spokesperson did not provide any figures, but wrote, "Bethany does receive funding to support our work with unaccompanied and separated children based on the services these children need, including a clinician, case manager, trauma-informed teacher, and foster family to provide trauma support." The trauma is coming from the... The trauma is coming from the people who are paying you.
The trauma is coming from inside the house.
Yeah. This is critical because these children have been traumatically separated from their families and are at significant risk for long-term harm. Yeah, by the people who are paying you.
Yeah. And you...
They didn't have to be ripped away from their families.
With that being said, a budget, you should still be offering a budget of what you're doing, where exactly all of that money is going to. Like, yeah, you can say that you're hiring a trauma specialist, but what if you're just like... you know, giving the trauma specialist $5. Like, where's...
Yeah.
People have the right to know.
Yeah. Additionally, the funds are used to provide essential supplies to the child during their stay with the foster family, including food, clothing, and other materials as needed. The specific amount of funding varies based on circumstances, but the care provided by Bethany is significantly more affordable than placing children in detention facilities.
What?
Jesus.
That's not... Yeah. It's not what we were asking or saying.
The spokesperson told us that wherever possible, children are not able to communicate with their parents via phone, but did not say how many had been able to do this. Similarly, the organization claimed on its website that some children had been reunified with their parents, but does not state how many. Wouldn't that be like a great thing that you would want to share?
Yeah, that's like the number you put on like the front page of your website.
Yeah. Feels shady to me.
Yeah.
We also asked Bethany what the end date is on its contract with the government and whether it was keeping track of the identity and whereabouts of each child, as well as the identity and whereabouts of each child's parent, but we did not receive a response to those questions.
That...
Snopes also said... I know. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Oh. They also sent similar detailed questions to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, including whether it was keeping a record of the identity and whereabouts of each child contracted out into foster care and each child's parents, as well as requesting some very basic facts on the number of separated children placed in foster care and the names of the organizations being paid for it. We did not receive a response to any of our questions. It's clear that Bethany Christian Services is doing some shady shit.
Yeah.
And the fact Holy that shit. They receive money from our government to rehome these children. God. I mean, this is insane. Absolutely insane.
The fuck?
So, before I get to the topic of forced sterilization, I want to talk about something that kind of, like, leads into it.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of the Great Replacement Theory?
Yes.
Okay. Well, for the folks listening at home who might not have, I'm going to read a quote from immigrationforum.org. The Great Replacement Theory, in simple terms, states that welcoming immigration policies, particularly those impacting non-white immigrants, are part of a plot designed to undermine or replace the political power and culture of white people living in Western countries. Multiple iterations of the Great Replacement Theory have been and continue to be used by anti-immigrant groups, white supremacists, and others. Prominent iterations include rhetoric of invasion. The theory often uses martial and violent rhetoric of a migrant invasion that must be stopped before it conquers white America. White America is so fragile.
So fragile. So it's like referring to gang members crossing the borders. All of that sort of pointed, super... Oh my God, what was that fun, super racist language? What was that thing that I think it was someone in Maine referred to, like, the gang members and gang bangers, like, crossing the borders.
Oh my shit. God.
Just, like, all of that sort of rhetoric is really based in this theory.
Yep. Another part of it is voter replacement. The theory also sometimes incorporates the inaccurate assumption that non-white immigrants will vote a certain way, and therefore pro-immigration policies are designed by elites to diminish the political influence of white Americans.
Jesus.
Also, anti-Semitism. In other iterations, the theory can be found embedded in a web of other xenophobic conspiracies, including anti-Semitic notions that Jewish elites are responsible for the replacement plot.
Oh, God.
Regardless of which version is referenced, proponents of the Great Replacement Theory almost always paint a life-or-death scenario concerning the fate of white America. The theory contends that non-white immigration must be stopped or else the country is on, as Tucker Carlson puts it, a suicidal path. The fear-mongering,
God
bro.
God damn it,
the fear-mongering. Fucking Tucker Carlson.
What a plague.
I hate him. As a consequence of these existential terms, the theory often coincides, directly or indirectly, with calls for violence.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, Tucker has touted it on his show multiple times. I've seen the clips. He referenced it directly for the first time on an April 8th, 2021 episode of Tucker Carlson Tonight, and then again on September 22nd, 2021. Other political figures on the right and far right have also brazenly endorsed the theory in recent weeks. This article was from 2021, so that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, he's a Republican from Texas, said of Haitian immigrants arriving at the border, "This is trying to take over our country without firing a shot."
Wow.
Wow. conservative activist and radio host Charlie Kirk said on his show that the Biden administration's immigration policy is about bringing in voters that they like and, honestly, diminishing and decreasing white demographics in America.
What?
Representative Brian Babin, another Republican from Texas, endorsed the theory, stating, they want to change America. They want to replace the American electorate with third world immigrants that are coming in illegally. What the fuck? These people are literally delusional.
Unhinged.
Representative Matt Gaetz,
God damn it,
tweeted, of course he did, at Tucker Carlson is correct. He did it all caps, correct, about replacement theory as he explains what is happening to America. Jesus fuck.
Oh my God.
I mean, you're a pedophile, bro. Shut up.
Truly.
Many other prominent figures, including former President Donald Trump, have used the related rhetoric of a migrant invasion. The Anti-Defamation League, a leading anti-hate organization, has vigilantly tracked the rise of the Great Replacement Theory and described its roots in racism, fascism, and anti-Semitism. In a recent piece, the ADL noted that self-proclaimed white supremacists have celebrated Tucker Carlson's broadcasts, with one announcing, now Tucker is name-dropping the Great Replacement Theory on his broadcasts. That's due to us. Bro, he's got these people, like, so emboldened to drive towards hate, and this theory has been on the rise for ages, decades, and even longer.
Oh, absolutely. And name-dropping the Great Replacement
Theory. Right? They're like, this is their, like, mainstream voice. That's what Tucker Carlson is for these people. Jesus. And, like, the fact that he's touting it just makes them believe that, like, it's okay for them to be violent.
Oh, my God.
When it comes to this shit. The Immigration Forum gave a few ways to try to combat the rise of the Great Replacement Theory. So I want to read those for everyone. Learn more about the history. Read through this resource. Visit, and I obviously will be giving the link for this. Visit the library. Use the internet to find information from fact-checked and trusted sources and researchers about the history of nativism and extremism in the United States and efforts to combat them. Help others understand where statements and theories like these originate. Share this resource and talk with your loved ones and friends. Amplify the voices of those who have spoken out against theories like these. Share speeches, quotes, articles that push back against this ideology and outline why it's so dangerous. Ask questions. When faced with a public official or community member who continues to share thoughts that fall along these lines, ask them yourselves and others questions about where they're getting their information, what proof they have to back up their statements, and more about where their theories come from. You may not change their minds, but your questions might inspire others to ask questions too. Get involved in your community to support immigrants, refugees, and migrants. With the rise in extremist narratives and ideas in the mainstream, it's imperative that we engage with the subject in a positive way. Speak up in support of policies that would help reform our immigration system to make us a country of welcome, or volunteer to help refugees resettling in your community. If you're looking for ways to take action on the national scale, see resources such as the National Immigration Forum's advocacy resources landing page. And bringing forced sterilization into this is something that they believe in. They don't want women of color, Black women, Hispanic women, Native women, having babies. They want only white women having babies. So, like, forced sterilization has been a major part of history, especially in this country.
Absolutely.
And it's those same people who are doing those kinds of things. For anyone who doesn't know what forced sterilization is, it's the involuntary or coerced removal of a person's ability to reproduce, often through a surgical procedure referred to as a tubal ligation. Forced sterilization is a human rights violation and can constitute as an act of genocide, gender-based violence, discrimination, and torture. Back in 2020, do you want to have something?
I was going to say, I think we talked about that in
my Crimes Against Humanity episode. Yeah. Back in 2020, multiple human rights groups joined a nurse in accusing a privately owned U.S. immigration detention center in Georgia of forcibly sterilizing women. They claimed that women in the detention center who were being detained by ICE were being given unauthorized medical procedures by Dr. Mahendra Amin. If you don't know what ICE is, listeners, it's immigration enforcement. In a quote from a Mississippi Free Press article, the whistleblower, Dawn Wooten, is a nurse and former employee of the center. She claims a high rate of hysterectomies were performed on Spanish-speaking women and women who spoke various indigenous languages common in Latin America. Wooten claims staff at Irwin County Detention Center failed to use proper anesthesia during surgeries. She said women who protested or spoke out were sent into solitary confinement. Wooten called the doctor the uterus collector.
What the fuck?
Yeah. She also said the center did not obtain proper consent for these surgeries or lied to women about the medical procedures.
Holy shit.
Many of these women do not speak English and were not properly informed about what occurred until after the operation, if at all.
There's not like a single step in this that was okay.
Yeah, none of it. According to Business Insider, Amin had previously been implicated in medical billing fraud.
What the fuck?
Like, bro, what?
Fuck.
These accusations coming out of an ICE facility are on the heels of other horrific claims. Widespread reports of sexual and physical abuse of children and detainees of all ages, as the Associated Press reported in June of 2019. I remember that.
Oh my God.
This is only a modern example here, but the United States has had a very, very long history of doing this. In the mid-70s, a group of Mexican women sued a doctor for conducting unauthorized medical procedures on women at L.A. County Hospital. Despite the roughly 20,000 sterilizations that were authorized in the state, a judge ruled that these forced surgeries were legal and performed in good faith.
Jesus. The thing is like, with everything that happened in the past, we're used to hearing about fucked up shit that happened in the past. But the first thing that you just talked about, like, that's a modern fucking example.
Yeah.
That's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
That, and it's been happening for so long. But I think a lot of people are like, well, it was happening.
Like, nah.
No.
It's still happening.
Right now.
Yeah. So despite legal reforms that essentially eliminated this practice, there are reports that it continues to happen in California state prisons. A 2010 report by prisoners' rights group Justice Now found nearly 150 incarcerated women were sterilized between 2006 and 2010 by state doctors. An article from the Center for Investigative Reporting reveals how the state of California paid doctors $147,460 to perform tubal ligations that former inmates say were done under coercion. Researchers believe there could be at least 100 more who have been sterilized in California prisons since 1990.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
The doctor who conducted these surgeries was paid close to $150,000, according to state records. The practice of sterilizing women in California prisons was deemed legal until the governor finally outlawed it in 2014 inside all state institutions.
What?
2014. It took Holy that long?
Shit.
It really took that long? Come on. Beginning in 1909 and continuing for 70 years, California led the country in the number of sterilization procedures performed on men and women, often without their full knowledge and consent. Approximately 20,000 sterilizations took place in state institutions, comprising one-third of the total number performed in the 32 states where such action was legal, and that's from the UC Santa Barbara Current.
Wow.
In the 50s and 60s in Puerto Rico, women were given an experimental drug by researchers interested in creating a birth control. Those women experienced serious side effects like blood clotting and infertility. They were not given information. These trials are also connected to a sterilization program where in part eugenics and in part corporate pharmaceutical research.
Wow.
Approximately one-third of Puerto Rican women were sterilized, mainly involuntarily. North Carolina was among one of the first states to include reproductive technology into its public health and welfare programs and had one of the most active state sterilization programs. North Carolina was also one of the first states to enact a voluntary sterilization law in 1960. These laws provided the state with the ability to sterilize those who were perceived as feeble-minded, with African American welfare recipients being one of the groups coerced into sterilization on this basis.
What?
Yeah. The percentage of African Americans state sterilized patients in North Carolina increased tremendously throughout the 20th century, from 23% in the 1930s and 40s to 59% between 1958 and 1960, and then 64% between 1964 and 1966. This info comes from the article Autonomy Revoked, the Forced Sterilization of Women of Color in 20th Century America by Paola Alonso. There are many organizations that are committed to combating forced sterilization nationally and internationally. Among them, we have like the UN, UNICEF, the International Justice Resource Center, and many others. And I am going to make sure that we post those everywhere. Awesome. Because if you want to be able to stop some of these things and or help people who are in tough situations, then you should reach out to these groups.
Yes.
If you have any interest in politics or human rights issues, human rights issues, I urge you to take an active step. Whether it be in an organization or stepping up to the plate in local, county, state, or national politics, make your voice heard and actively support legislation to tighten the restrictions on different forms of adoption for better and less traumatic experiences of children and birth mothers. I mean, this shit is literally so crazy and so traumatizing for, I want to say everyone involved, but like it's not traumatizing for people or groups like Bethany.
Yeah, she does.
Christian Services.
They don't care.
Yeah. That's not traumatizing for them, but it's traumatizing for the birth mother and for the child.
Yeah.
And I just really think that, like, if we're going to be letting people adopt and, like, buy children from someone else, we need to have way stricter standards.
Absolutely.
On who, you know, not even like necessarily like who gets picked as a family, but who was allowed to oversee,
yes,
the selling of children.
Yes.
And what kind of financial ties do they have and political ties do they have? We need to have much higher restrictions on that.
There shouldn't be a profit made on children finding homes.
Yeah. There also shouldn't be Facebook pages,
yeah,
with people rehoming children like it's a dog. So, y'all, can you please, if you ever see those fucking groups on Facebook, report them.
I'm, like, report them. Gonna actively start seeing them out and reporting,
yes,
them. Like, that,
yes,
is so...
It's fucking sick.
Creepy.
It's sick.
And human trafficky.
Yeah. Listen, I think we got a lot of work to do as far as, you know, making sure that women and children are traumatized just so they can have, you know, be with a family that has more money. And that's the thing, too. It's like, do what Planned Parenthood and other, what you want to call abortion clinics, but really just women's health clinics, like, do what they do and actually help people and give them resources to getting a better job, to getting a little bit of extra help with food and things like that, clothing.
Birth control.
Birth control. My God. Like, let's stop traumatizing women and telling them to give up their babies. Just all of that money that you're going to get in a profit through these adoption agencies, that money should be going to these women to help them keep their families together instead of traumatizing them in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't understand. Like, it's really? What I was talking about earlier.
Oh,
Shoopy.
Shoopy doesn't get it either.
No.
He said, are you guys done yet?
We're going to be sending money to families to raise children. Why not send it to the parents who want to be parents of their own kids?
Yeah, that's right, Chalupa. That's right.
I get it.
And with that, we've hit over an hour. So,
yeah, I'm going to emotionally spiral for the rest of the day until I go to sleep.
Well, we'll be together in that process.
Mm-hmm.
Until next week, folks. Bye.
Bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.